Welcome back to another luscious episode of Legally Judgy. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Nicole.
Did you like that one? Your face looked really impressed.
Wasn't expecting it for some reason. I don't know why.
I'm always trying to...
I guess that 1 week off at the start of the month really threw me off.
Yeah. You need to get back into the swing of things. I understand. And for everyone else that needs to get back into the swing of things, judgy reminders. Shout out to our Patreon, everyone. If you have not checked it out, go check it out. We have some cool stuff on our Patreon. We got uncut episodes. Those are really fun. If you miss our personal intros, we got extra segments. Go check it out. We have a community hub, extra behind the scenes footage. We got polls, particular like fun stuff where you can come ask us questions and we're going to interact with you. We also have some fun minisodes where we break down interesting and weird legal issues in pop culture. So I highly recommend it.
We also have our YouTubes where we do our pop culture roundup videos. So also getting into some random shit that we like, but it's fun. It's lighthearted. There's no perpetuity.
No perpetuity.
Just laughs.
Just laughs.
So join us on our YouTubes at Legally Judgy. You know who is always in the spirit for giving and fun and shit talking?
Who?
Lisa Vanderpump.
Lisa Vanderpump. She is definitely in the spirit of shit talking. I agree.
She likes some fun. I mean, I feel like she actually used to throw really beautiful events on the show. So that's why I say that she's always in the mood for like spirit. Like it was very elaborate dinners and lunches and lots of things at Villa
Blanca.
The other one. Villa Rosa.
Villa Rosa, her home. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for those of you who have not into the reality programming.
Good for you, honestly. Save those
first of all, congratulations. Yeah. Happy holidays. Yeah. Second of all, Lisa Vanderpump is, I would say, probably one of the most iconic housewives of all the housewife franchises.
She's up there.
I won't say she's number one, but she's definitely like top five, I would say.
Number one is NeNe Leakes. Lanithia Leakes.
Okay. Well, this episode's not about her. Okay, to Lisa Vanderpump. Mm-hmm. She is an OG from the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, for those of you who don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that because, as Nicole, you just said, she is probably, you know why? Because I think Beverly Hills, we've talked about this on the Dorit episode, they have real money, all of them. And I think Lisa, she was just, ornate, to your point, right? Everything was like a grandiose event, even if you were going to one of her restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like a party planner, right? Because she's a restaurateur.
Yep.
Restaurant owner. So that's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to get into it today because as we've talked about on many an episode, you can't be this rich and this famous without several lawsuits along the way. Maybe, is that a sign of success if you start getting sued?
I think so. I mean, when you're rich, people want your money. Yeah. So they're like, how do I find a claim?
Well, then she's very successful because she has quite a few lawsuits.
She's got a few.
And by the way, people, we're not even talking about all of them. These are just a highlight reel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, that's right.
You want to intro us on the Lisa of the Vanderpump?
Yes. So like you said, she is a businesswoman. She's a TV personality. She's an author and she's a philanthropist.
Sweet.
You know, good, well-rounded lady.
Which by the way, that... Literally those words on her website, right?
Yeah, in quotes. Sorry, I should have said that wasn't, those weren't quotes on her website.
Just, I love her talking about herself in that way. I can imagine it. I mean, sounds real humble.
It's okay. So
she's very humble.
She was born in London in 1960, and she actually started her entertainment career back in the 1970s when she appeared in a few movies. And she even works with Naomi Campbell. Oh my God, Naomi.
It's the Omicron. I did it to her.
She even works with Naomi Campbell on the British show Kids and then continues to act in like various other shows, including Baywatch Nights. But ultimately, like the acting doesn't really move her career forward. And so at 21 years old, she marries a millionaire at restaurateur Ken Todd in 1982. And Ken and Lisa reportedly met after Lisa went to pick up her brother, who was working at one of Ken's bars at the time. And so the bar, I guess, at that point was understaffed. So she starts working the door to try and help out, which is interesting because if you've watched the show, she talks so much shit about like Erica Jane having worked in a restaurant and, or well, I guess that was a strip club, but like she was
a waitress, wasn't she? A server at a strip club?
She was working in a food establishment, food and dance establishment, and you know,
nightlife.
Backdoor met her husband.
She was doing nightlife. Yeah.
But so Ken, her future husband, ends up showing up and she tries to basically charge him an entrance fee, obviously not knowing who he was at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, Ken was obviously into it because just 6 weeks later, very fast, they got married.
Yeah. That's a nice meet cute. I can't believe they got married over just 6 weeks of time, especially because she talks a lot about how he was such a playboy that he, I don't know how she knew that.
Different day and age, though. I think people got married way faster than they do now.
That's true. This was like in the 1920s, so that might be true.
Yeah.
So after they got married, she ends up designing and managing Ken's restaurants in London. Clearly, she's married into the family business, and I feel like she actually takes a big part of it, though. She's actually good at it. Mm-hmm. It's not just one of those wives who pretends that, you know, she's part of the business.
Well, so, good at it is debatable.
Oh, you don't think so?
By the end of this episode, we'll be debating whether she's good at anything.
Oh, okay. Well,
we'll get back to
it. I'm excited to hear what you have to say. Okay. This all kind of peaks for her when she ends up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in 2010 as an original cast member on the show. Did you like her right away?
I didn't mind her at first. I liked that she seemed very like classy and put together, and she had her kids. I mean, they were grown, but yeah. She had her kids and she had her dogs and her husband had this beautiful house. And like, I didn't mind her, but as time went on, she became more and more problematic and was very clearly like stirring the pot and making shit up and pitting people against each other. And at that point I was kind of like, I'm good on you. Like this feels a bit too forced for you to try and stay relevant.
I could see that.
Did you see her in the beginning? What did you think?
Yeah, I actually started rewatching season one today.
Yes, that's where you did tell me that.
I did. Because I forgot, right? This aired in 2010, which is crazy to think about. This was 11 years ago now.
Yeah.
So my idea of Lisa Vanderpump has obviously changed over time. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember all the seasons off the top of my head. So I went back to just watch the first episode to get an idea of, you know, what it was like. And she does come off really nice at first, you know. Well, kind of snooty, but in a funny way, kind of... I'm not going to say she's in the same ballpark as Kathy Hilton, but, you know, rich, not aloof, but like she makes these digs all of a sudden. And like you said, comes off as classy. So I wouldn't expect all of a sudden she gets very sarcastic. And I'm like, okay, I kind of like that because I like sarcasm. And then, yes, I agree. Over time, it was clear that she was instigating a lot and she would get other women to do her bidding, it felt like. And then when that woman who was sent to do the bidding would confront her, it almost felt like she would gaslight them a lot.
She was definitely gaslighting them.
Yeah. And so then I got turned off from her. But I will say that the most amusing points about her story is one, Jiggy, R.I.P.
Jiggy.
She's basically animal obsessed. And she was the quintessential Beverly Hills housewife that always had the small dog on her arm and
also
took
like
this
in
dog
a pink bag. She would like pink. Put him in pink bags and pink sweaters and
this poor dog.
Yeah, I think maybe he liked it though.
He had alopecia, she said, so that's why. She
was,
said
it's kind of weird.
She said that he was cold. Yeah. Alopecia meaning, you know, he doesn't have his fur on his body, but he had fur on his face and on his paws. So she would just cover him up. So that was weird because she really brought him literally everywhere. And then Villa Rosa, which you alluded to, her crazy mansion that she ends up purchasing, not in the first season but later on, which has various animals, horses, dogs, miniature horses, chickens, swans. I'm sure she has geese too.
Is that the same thing? No, swans have really long legs. I mean,
swans are like, don't do that. Don't compare us.
Yeah, sorry.
I just, swans. It's so elaborate and over the top. I'm like, why do you need mini horses at your place, right? Yeah. Anyway, I say that because I want to paint the picture for people who do not know who she is.
Yeah.
Very over the top.
You did a good job.
Thank you.
So despite all the drama, she was actually quite vocal about protecting her dogs, like you mentioned. I mean, she loves the animals. And she was also quite vocal about LGBTQ rights. And unrelated to LGBTQ, but with the dog stuff, she spoke a lot about the Yulin Dog Meat Festival and the website that she had basically launched to stop the abuse, torture, and slaughter of dogs across the world. And impressively, actually really impressively, she even goes on to Congress to address this. And then, you know, for anybody who wants to learn more on, you know, the sad kind of things that happened and her work, she did this documentary called The Road to Yulin and Beyond. But long story short, you know, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is really what put her into like any type of spotlight. And like you said, she was already successful with the restaurants before, but it propelled her in a whole different way.
Right.
And so as a result of her time on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, she ends up getting a bunch of opportunities, including in 2011, taking part in CNN's coverage of the wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton, who I am not a fan of.
Either of them?
So I used to love Prince William, actually. I mean, he was like the hot one when we were all growing up.
When he had hair?
Yeah, and then he got not hot, but then
when
also...
he went bald?
Yes, and then he had no hair. But even more so than that, I'm like, ooh, so you don't stand up for your brother? Like, that's not cool.
Oh, the Prince Harry
I don't
Meghan
like
Markle?
This whole thing about... I don't like how he's not standing up for his brother with the whole Meghan Markle marriage.
Does that mean you're Team Meghan over Team Kate?
No, 1,000%.
Yep.
She's not... Kate's not special to me. Sorry, I'm sure people will be offended by that, but...
No, it's okay. You can say that here. This is a safe space.
She doesn't float my boat.
And speaking of, go check out our Meghan Markle episode if you haven't already. Okay. Season one.
Good shout out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2013, Lisa gets her first spinoff reality show called Vanderpump Rules, which focuses on the staff at her various restaurants in LA. And so this starts mainly with Sir, and then kind of a little bit of Villa Blanca, which has actually since closed because they couldn't come to an agreement with the landlord, you know, during slash after the pandemic. And then she ultimately expands the show to include Pump and Tom Tom, which she had opened later up. And you can actually kind of see some of the like opening conversations around those restaurants on Vanderpump mm-hmm. Rules. And then in 2013, she also is on Dancing with the Stars. Sadly, she was the second person to be eliminated and left in 10th place. So
not too surprising, to be honest.
No, she doesn't look like she's probably like...
Got the rhythms?
Yeah, no.
Got the hip movement? Got the salsa?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
And then, you know, she had other random deals along the way, like all the housewives do. She had a book. She had a homeware line, pet accessories, emojis called Vandermojis.
Did not know that, by the way.
Didn't need that. Mm-hmm. She had rosé and wines, which makes sense because she's literally always drinking rosé and wine on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Literally.
Not in like a she drinks too much kind of way, but like she just always got a glass of something.
When they are drinking, yeah. It's something pink. Like she's obsessed with pink. Everything's
she
pink.
Was definitely not one to drink tequila on the show.
No, did she ever? Yeah, actually. I'm trying to think if I ever remember her doing hard liquor.
But like now all the housewives
yeah.
on at least that franchise will have like a tequila soda with like limes or tequila soda with orange slices. Yeah, crazy. And
maybe know. She thought it was the classier thing, especially on television, not to be doing shots, but instead, I imagine too for her, she's trying to build a brand mm-hmm. around her restaurants mm-hmm. too. So she wants to sell elegance.
Fair, yeah.
So maybe that's why?
Yeah. I mean, it's also easier to, like, stay on your toes and talk shit about people when you're not drinking, so.
I would be very hesitant if I was on a reality show to be drinking too much because, Lord knows, I do not need to relive my own drunken nights.
Yeah.
So thank God they are not recorded.
Yep.
So as we previously mentioned, she also has a philanthropic side, especially toward animals. In 2017, she started a nonprofit dog rescue center called the Vanderpump Dog Foundation. So for anyone who wants more, check out her reality show, Vanderpump Dogs, which aired on Peacock this past June. I wish we got sponsored by all of this, by the way.
Know. Like we our just shout out everybody's documentary.
Just so everybody knows, we're not getting paid for any
not
of this.
Not one thing.
We're just giving you all the informations. You're welcomes. In 2019, she actually leaves Real Housewives of Beverly Hills after 9 seasons.
Long time.
She says there's different rumors about why she left, but I think, and I don't know if you think, Nicole, I think mm-hmm. it was Puppygate. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say it. Mm-hmm.
Tell people what the puppy gate was.
Puppy gate. Oh my God. Let me tell you, because this got dragged out mm-hmm. for the entire season. It was exhausting mm-hmm. to have to witness.
It started like in episode 1 of that season.
It really
just
truly
dove
did.
Right in. Like, okay.
It was like the opening
scene. No catch
scene.
Up? Yeah.
No, I was like, what the hell happened with this puppy gate thing? Yeah. And then they really dragged it. I just thought like, guys, I'm kind of getting over it. Like yeah. maybe you could have done this in a couple episodes, but quick recap for anyone who did not watch. Dorit, the alleged scammer Kemsley, for anybody who did not listen to our Dorit Kemsley or does not know who Dorit Kemsley is, we have an episode on it. Go listen to it now. Very entertaining one. But Dorit, another housewife on the show, adopts a dog from Lisa's foundation. All good and well, right? Well, apparently things didn't work out with the dog because Dorit reportedly gave that dog to a friend after she says that this dog bit her husband, PK, and her 2 kids. Again, it didn't seem to work out with this friend because this dog ended up at a kill shelter. Lisa and the foundation caught wind of it. I think they might have gotten a call because it was chipped or something. And basically, suffice it to say, Lisa is pissed off.
Yeah.
She's not happy. She cares so much about dogs. For one of her dogs to end up at a kill shelter, not good. Mm-hmm. The story ultimately gets leaked to the press. And that's
leaked,
what
in air quotes.
Leaked. Okay.
That's, like you always yeah. have to add the air quotes when
that's
you
true.
Say leaked.
I know, as I do it, as if people can yeah. see me. And rumors start swirling that it was actually Lisa who leaked the story to get back at Dorit for doing all this. Obviously, this creates a lot of drama, and especially between her and Kyle Richards, another housewife who basically Lisa is BFFs with. And I feel like personally, once Kyle basically agreed with everybody that she thought it was Lisa who leaked the story, Lisa was like, I'm done, because she had no more allies.
I mean, she had no more allies, but also right after the season, right, when she would have presumably gotten picked back up and renewed her contract for a new season, so much had come out from her former employees and like publicists or journalists, I guess, about the things that she was doing and planting. Mm-hmm. And so I think between having no allies and between like the news and information coming out after the fact, there was like no saving grace for Lisa at that point in time.
Yeah, I don't think that's untrue. I think the problem with these franchises, especially where people may actually be friends, is, especially in the reunions, you hear about mm-hmm. accusations that people are selling stories to the tabloids because they want to stay relevant.
Yeah.
And to your point, I do think that because Lisa had gotten caught up in other instances of selling secrets, mm-hmm. probably actually divulging a lot of this to Kyle, who's supposed to be her best friend, maybe mm-hmm. Kyle got sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a couple times Kyle felt like Lisa didn't have her back.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Kyle, I think, got fed up with that too.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't keep covering for you and cleaning up your messes
right.
if you're not going to have my back in the same way that I have your back.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Lisa was like, you know what? Fuck it. It's not worth it. I don't need the money that much. So I'm out.
Yeah.
And she left.
Yeah. What? But then she goes basically back to focusing on her restaurants or running the restaurants that her and her husband Ken own. And so despite seemingly being a well-established restaurateur and having multiple shows about her businesses and restaurants, including the Vanderpump Rules one that we talked about, she unsurprisingly runs into several legal issues along the way.
Mm-hmm. Break it down, girl.
The first one comes in December 2019. And a class action lawsuit was filed against Lisa and Ken by Adam Pierce Antoine, who worked for them for a few months in 2018, along with a few other employees from TomTom, Sir, Pump, and Villa Blanca, all alleging multiple violations of California labor law for over 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So a class action is a lawsuit where the plaintiff brings a lawsuit for the benefit of a larger group of affected people. And so class actions are often the only way for individuals to pursue their claims, as it basically lowers the cost of the legal pursuit because multiple people are sharing all the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it also makes it easier for the courts to process the same similar claims like all at the same time by consolidating it all into one lawsuit, so they can just review all of the evidence at once. Mm-hmm. You can do one big judgment, presumably, if the plaintiffs win
mm-hmm.
and just divide it as, you know, the court sees fit amongst the plaintiffs. So to get into like the smaller, more specific claims, again, they had alleged multiple violations of California labor law, and they characterized these claims as basically policies and routine practices at the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things they brought up were basically saying that Lisa and Ken failed to pay overtime, including instances where the employees worked shifts longer than 12 hours a day, and even when they worked more than 40 hours per week. They said that Lisa and Ken failed to pay minimum wages for off-the-clock hours, training, and if the servers or the staff were on call. They didn't provide meal breaks or compensation in lieu of the breaks if they didn't get the breaks. And then they altered time records to show fewer hours than the employees actually worked so that they could, like, fit the time cards basically within, you know, the labor regulations set by California.
Mm-hmm.
On top of this, they failed to pay these employees after they were fired and did not provide them with pay stubs, which you obviously need for, like, taxes and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, kind of breaking it all down, right? So for those who don't know, you are definitely required to pay minimum wages.
Mm, good to know.
You know.
That's the law, huh?
You're welcome if you ever run a business.
Okay.
And so minimum wages are regulated by both state governments and federal governments. And so California actually pays above the federal minimum, which is, I guess, you know, helpful.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to live here. So
yeah, states.
Please give us more. In California, and you also have to give breaks for meals to people if they work a certain amount of time. In California specifically, where all of Lisa and Ken's restaurants are located, generally, you know, restaurants are required to give 30 minute lunch breaks if you work more than 5 hours and 10 minute breaks for every 4 hours of work. And if you don't get those breaks, an employee must be compensated.
Okay. I feel empowered now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make sure to at least pay my employees when I
please pay them their minimum
have a
wage
business.
And give them their breaks.
Okay, noted.
That's the gist of that.
Okay, thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam is seeking $25,000 for himself. I couldn't find what the others were requesting. It was difficult, but $25,000 just for Adam.
Yep.
And Team LVP, we're going to refer them as LVP, her and Ken together, they claim that these are basically just disgruntled former employees that had been written up with many warnings by management and subsequently let go. I don't personally think that this is an ironclad defense. I'm getting kind of Ja Rule vibes.
I mean, even if they're disgruntled and you fire them, like, you still have to pay them. And even if, and on top of the fact that if those violations were still happening while they were working for you, it doesn't really matter if you fired them or how upset they are.
Right. Okay. It seems like this was a statement made to the press. I imagine their point is none of this is true.
Mm-hmm.
They're just upset because maybe they weren't performing where they needed to perform. They were let go, or Maybe they had a lot of write-ups. Basically, they're making all of this up. It's not true.
I feel like at least say the part that, like, it's not true, to your point. You know what I mean? Like, why don't we start with, you know, these claims are not correct.
Yes, right. We always pay.
We uphold, we pay, right. We give breaks, etc.
Right.
But also, these people are maybe, you know, some pissy former employees.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe you should reach out to their PR team.
I will.
They may have made these statements, but they're not making them public. And mm-mm. I feel like this is an instance where you want to do that, right? Clear your name as a big restaurateur.
When it comes to paying your employees, yeah, I think so.
And when you have a reality show based on said employees.
Right.
In July 2020, similar to what you just broke down, a second class action lawsuit's filed against Lisa and Ken by SIR workers this time. This one's led by an employee, a former employee named Olivia Hansen, who worked as a hostess for them from October 2019 to January 2020. So also just a couple months. Her claims very similar to the previous claims. Basically, she says that they failed to pay minimum and overtime wages. She pointed out how employees routinely worked over 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, and 7 consecutive workdays without being properly paid. Again, they didn't properly track hours or provide accurate wage statements or stubs, which, as you said before, you need to have those. Again, they manipulated records to show lesser hours worked than they actually worked during the pay period. They didn't give breaks for meals or to rest. And again, they claimed here that this had been going on for at least 1 to 4 years. It's interesting to me, you're seeing this 4 years again, especially by employees. The lead plaintiffs in both class actions that we've talked about had been there for just a couple months at that point. Mm-hmm. Something I just checked. I don't really know what's going on there because we couldn't get the complaints themselves, but interesting. The damages on this one, basically they're asking for all wages earned and owed. Damages for unpaid and missed meal and rest periods, gratuities earned and not received. So essentially, the money that they should have gotten paid.
Yep.
Pay it back.
Yeah.
Here, we actually get a statement from LVP that's a little bit more robust. So let's get into it. They say, SIR denies the allegations in the lawsuit brought by our former employee, Olivia Hansen. The company takes employee compensation very seriously and has extensive policies and procedures in place to comply with the wage laws. We care deeply for our employees and are committed to providing them with fair and competitive compensation that is fully compliant with the law. During this difficult and challenging time, we will continue to strive to responsibly and safely reopen our restaurant in order to return our valued employees back to work. Because again, this is all during COVID time.
During COVID,
the pandemic.
Yep.
So I want to note too that this is probably not the best time to... I think you just need to be even more careful about your PR statements here. If and when you are open, right?
Yeah.
Because they're basically, I feel like that second part, they're trying to address the pandemic because they know people are probably going to judge them even more because they might allegedly be doing this to employees during a time where this is literally the worst time to not be paying your employees, if that's true, and be overworking them because we all know that the restaurant business took huge hits during the pandemic.
They were working from home, so not paying people who then got sent home and could not work at least for the restaurants and maybe had a difficult time finding work elsewhere. Like, to your point, you really have to be sensitive about the messaging around those people, whether right or wrong.
Agreed.
Well, so, okay, that was a nicer statement than the last one. I appreciate that.
Some improvement.
Appreciate that effort. But in October 2020, yet again, a third class action lawsuit was filed against Lisa and Ken by their pump workers. This one was led by Ernest Bennick, who reportedly worked as a server between July 2018 and December 2019. And here, the claims are similar. He addresses failure to pay overtime wages, failure to pay minimum wages, wage statement violations, again, over the course of 4 years, like you mentioned. The employee said that they frequently worked over 8 hours per day, 40 hours per week, and 7 days in a week without proper compensation from overtime. They claim that Lisa and Ken manipulated and edited time records to make it look like people worked less than they actually did and let them work off the clock. They also require them to be on call without proper compensation, and they were paid at improper rates. And they accuse Lisa and Ken of even letting supervisors take tips that were for servers. They claim they didn't pay full compensation after people were fired or quitting, and last but not least, it didn't provide legally required rest or lunch breaks.
Okay.
And so in November of 2020, Lisa and Ken filed a formal response and basically denied all of these claims and said that Pump had always been in compliance with California labor laws. Okay. No official statement at this time, but at that point, they're probably like, We're just going to say the same exact thing that we've already said multiple times. So maybe we'll just handle this in court.
Deny. Just sounds like their strategy here.
I think that's right.
Okay.
And so the cherry on top, around this time in late 2020, early 2021, it was reported that the California Franchise Tax Board suspended Lisa's restaurant Pump and their operations because of failure to pay taxes, failure to file tax returns, and failure to pay penalties and interest on accrued taxes.
Ouch.
Lisa alleges that the discrepancy was only over a $250 filing fee from 216, which I feel...
The year 2016. Very,
what did I just say?
216.
Why do I always do that?
I love when you do this. We're like in the rural medieval times.
I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I just can't get the years
right. It's end of year, girl. We are tired. You know, we're ready for the new year.
I don't even hear it. Okay.
216. Yeah. So 2016, the year 2016. Of our Lord.
Oh, 2016. So I was going to say, I have a really hard time believing that the California Tax Board was going to suspend her restaurant's operations over a $250 filing fee from 5 years prior.
Yeah, I guess. Unless they were like, in 2017, hey, yo, here's your warning, 2018. Lisa, come on, man, 2018. Lisa can really, 2019, right? And then by the time they get to 2021, they're like, we want our 250 now.
That's insane. And also, like, there's no interest on top of that filing fee. It's just 250.
Yeah, this might be a bit of her web of lies. I don't know.
It doesn't seem believable.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, this is pretty ridiculous.
It doesn't make sense. But the restaurant has since opened, so it seems she was able to scrape that, you know, little $250 together.
Okay, I didn't know if she needed a GoFundMe.
We'll donate.
Because I know that she has that Beverly Hills mansion. I'm sure the utility bills a lot. And then in July 2021, let's fast forward and we're going to change it up because I gotta.
You're tired of the employee claims.
We're going to pivot a little bit.
Okay.
And we'll come back to them. We'll in our where things stand now. Okay. But I have to tell you about this one because this one threw me. I'm not going to lie. She's not just a restaurateur, Nicole.
She's a philanthropist.
She's a philanthropist. She loves the dogs.
Yeah.
Lisa and Ken's Vanderpump Dog Foundation was sued by a woman named Kimberly Dillon for negligence and fraud, among other claims, but those are the ones we're going to focus on, people, after our dear Kimberly allegedly contracted parasites from a puppy she adopted from them.
So gross.
It's okay. I'm really going to try to not be too gross with this stuff.
I'm going to not listen for the rest.
You can just walk out at this point. So can everyone listening, but just please let the podcast episode just continue to play. It makes our consumption rates look good. So according to Kimberly's court papers, she adopted a Dachshund puppy named Cassie.
Is that how you say that? Dachshund?
Dachshund?
I don't, Dachshund? I'm literally asking. You're the dog person.
I think so.
I always thought it was like Dachshund. I realize there's no O in it.
This is like me saying Omicron. I just want there to be an N in the beginning. Yeah, why not? I think it's Dachshund.
It's fine. Go ahead.
Judges, you let me know if we're pronouncing.
Yeah, tell us.
We're doing our best here, okay? We know how to say perpetuity, and that's about it. So she adopts a dog, okay, named Cassie back in July 2019 after purportedly being assured by the Vanderpump staff that Cassie was in good health and had been dewormed. We don't want to get too graphic here, but basically, Cassie apparently had some serious live worm issues. So Kimberly tried to contact the Vanderpump Foundation about it, but apparently they never picked up, returned calls, nothing. So Cassie takes poor little puppy to the vet. The vet fixes her all up. She's fine. But then, a couple days later, Kimberly, the human, starts to feel very, very sick. And again, I don't want to get too graphic, but she's saying that she herself started expelling live worms and eggs.
That is so disgusting. Okay.
Different parts of her body.
My stomach is literally turning right now.
I'm not going to describe anything else, but if anyone's interested, you can Google it and they will explain where these things were being expelled from her body.
Okay.
So she claims that she was diagnosed with intestinal parasites and had to get strong medication for it. She also claims she suffers from emotional distress, disgust, and nightmares. I want to emphasize the fact that disgust.
You can sue for disgust.
Disgust is in this claim.
Specific one for California? I don't think I've heard that before.
I have not read the statute of disgust yet, but it's there.
All right.
As a result, she's now suing Vanderpump's Dog Foundation for negligence and fraud. Negligence, basically a failure to act with reasonable care. Here she's saying that they failed to act with reasonable care when they claimed Cassie was healthy when she actually wasn't. She even points to them telling her several times that it was safe for her to play with Cassie at the actual store before choosing to adopt her, mm-hmm. among other things, right? There's going to be a lot here. This is all, if this is true, negligence, right? Yeah. Because also you're supposed to care for the puppy, keep it in good health mm-hmm. as a nonprofit organization charged with caring for puppies and dogs and all that. So a lot there. Fraud, wrongful or criminal deception intended to result in financial or personal gain. So here she's claiming the foundation provided her with false immunization and dewormer certification records for Cassie. So she's saying, you guys lied to me. You provided me with these documents and you said she was in good health and she wasn't. Mm-hmm. So both claims very intertwined. Vanderpumps have not responded here.
Shocking.
But this one will be an interesting one to watch.
I don't even know what you say that looks good PR wise. If somebody's like, I'm expelling live worms and eggs from my body. Like what is the response to that without sounding like a complete insensitive asshole?
I do not know. And it's actually interesting because on the negligence claim, like, let's just really play this out, right? Because if I'm Vanderpump, I'm going to think, okay, well, let me look at the records. Because if they say they administered actual dewormer medication to the dog, then they had reasonable belief to think that the dog was dewormed, right? How would you know?
But only if the certifications were correct, right? Because if she's saying they're false, then...
Correct. If they were doctored, if they were completely doctored, I guess how do you prove that they were completely fake? You'd have to like go back through their records or maybe you talk to whatever vet purportedly administered it. Because presumably they have an outside vet that they work with.
Yep.
So if this vet says and testifies saying, mm-hmm. actually, yeah, I gave Cassie the shots, so this is weird... You know, that kind of stuff happens, I imagine, with dogs. Like, I've adopted several dogs over my lifetime and from pounds, right, from rescue centers. And they often do come with worms because they're around other dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not unheard of. It's just interesting that she herself contracted the worms. And then what do you do with that?
That's gross.
I also feel like just wash your hands. I don't know. I don't know how you can't yourself. Imagine. I don't want to get into
washing the hands thing, but we're just going to move on.
I think it's when you... touch the dog that's infected and then you eat something. That's how you get it, right?
They ingest it. Not to like make generalizations, but some people let dogs lick their face.
No, you're right.
And so I feel
you're right
that if you're letting an animal lick your face, some things might pass from one body to another.
That's not actually a very bad, that's not a bad point at all to mention because dogs are going to lick their butts. That's they so just gross. Do. Okay. And then they lick you. But I'm saying that if that's true, then the Vanderpump Foundation shouldn't be liable for that necessarily.
No.
Anyway, I'm watching this one, girl.
Okay.
Okay.
So where are things now? So it was really difficult to find a definitive status on the class actions by her employees, but they all seem to still be pending in the courts. So the first one filed by Adam, it appears to have had a couple of attempts at mediation and settlements according to the court records, but it doesn't look like those attempts have actually been successful, so TBD. Mm-hmm. The second class action that was filed by Olivia may actually be closer to resolution since as of early December last year, there was a hearing for settlement approval scheduled. So, you know, we can keep our fingers crossed for a little Olivia. And then the third class action filed by Ernest, according to court docket entries, it looks like the parties had some mediation attempts, but TBD on whether they'll actually reach a settlement. So long story short, these things do not seem to be closed out for Lisa and Ken just yet.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I realize we didn't really even speculate on this, but I feel like this is just going to be so fact specific. There's no way we can even give any legal opinions here because they're going to just have to, the courts are going to have to do their digging and the plaintiffs are going to have to prove whether all of this is true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I imagine they're going to have to use their pay stubs. I don't know. I don't even know. How do you prove that you weren't paid for time if they altered the records? Like that's going to be an interesting one to have to prove.
I guess you would start with subpoenaing or having testimony from people who worked at the restaurant who are responsible for the records to say that they were doctored and that they had actually like, you know, basically marked or undercounted their hours. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they were underpaid. And I guess I can maybe get former managers to also say that they didn't print out the pay stubs that they would have to give to people who, you know, were fired or resigned, whatever the case is. So I think, you probably need some like good testimony in this one.
Yeah. And I want to point out too that obviously Lisa and Ken are not necessarily there. They're not managers of these restaurants. They're owners.
Right.
So if let's say these claims were true, let's say it was managers who were doing this, it'll be interesting to see how liability flows up to them because they're owners. Ultimately, I think we always say this, I think that there will be settlements because that's probably just easier to settle all of these without having to go to court and pay all those court costs and all the time. We always talk about this, but I do think that just because these, even if these claims are true, it doesn't necessarily mean that Lisa and Ken themselves knew about it, but they probably need to do better by hiring better managers.
What's that legal theory? Respondeat superior.
Oh my God, you're such a, you call me a dork.
Is that it?
You're such a legal right dork
one.
Too.
I think that's the one where it basically means that like owners and bosses are liable for the things that happen with, you know, within their companies and that their employees do, whether it's like a manager or, and even if they didn't like necessarily know about it.
Yeah, no, completely agree. I just mean, and that's what I want to point out to people, just because they're not there on the day to day doesn't mean that they were aware of it, but it also doesn't mean that they won't be responsible for it. And I think too, what should come out of it is that they should just be more mindful about who they hire as managers, probably have a stricter hand in the types of environments and the culture they set for the restaurant. If they're overworking their workers, pay them more, make sure they're getting paid, just, you know, create a nicer environment.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. That's all I wanted to point out.
Okay. Well, so in February of this year, 2021, in a slight turn of events, LVP's two restaurants, Sur and Villa Blanca, were actually sued by a produce company this time called West Central Produce for non-payment of delivery of goods. Basically, this produce company alleges that they're owed approximately $100,000 plus interest for orders that they had made to pump in Villa Blanca. And so they're saying that Lisa and Ken haven't paid since March 2020, allegedly. And so also unclear where this one stands now, but clearly like they're in quite a bit of legal shit with all of the restaurants, from the employees to the produce to the everything in between.
Pay your produce people. I did see that Ken made a statement saying that he wasn't aware of this lawsuit, but that he was going to check with his accountant and make sure that all fees are paid. He's I always pay my bills, is essentially what his comment was.
All right. That's one way to respond.
Maybe we just got a $100,000 misunderstanding.
Yeah.
In November, speaking to, I guess, our point of Lisa, just create a better environment for your workers. Lisa urged the West Hollywood City Council, where several of her bars are located, if not all, I guess all, now that Villa Blanca's closed, because Villa Blanca was in Beverly Hills. She urged the West Hollywood City Council to hold off on raising the local minimum wage to $17.64, which, by the way, if anyone has not been to West Hollywood, it is very, very expensive.
Super expensive.
Very expensive. Yeah. One of the more expensive little hubs in LA. Mm-hmm. She says that it'll be counterproductive to raise this minimum wage. Mm. Of course.
Yikes.
She gets a lot of backlash online. Fans are reacting, calling her greedy and out of touch, right? Because she's this multimillionaire restaurateur and entrepreneur. So how dare you? She defends herself. She says it wasn't about the raise itself, but about the approach to doing it. She says a lot of businesses are still trying to get back on their feet with the pandemic. So she wanted a tiered approach based on tipped versus non-tipped employees, since tipped employees may already be making quite a bit. I think she even said like some might make $100,000 in a year.
Yeah, I was reading some article and they were, and I guess there are, I guess if you work in Beverly Hills or WeHo, it makes sense, but some employees are tipped like from $500 to $1,000 a day, depending on how much business comes through. So she was trying to say that like, since the tipped employees could all already make $500 to $1,000 on top of their like minimum wage or their salary, whatever, like we should, that she should be giving, that the increase that the city council, you know, proposes or whatever should be given to like the non-tipped employees, like the people who work in the kitchen and the things like that, where you're not like basically customer facing.
You know, that's interesting though, because I imagine that, let's say you're at a less fancy restaurant, because her restaurants are fancy, I would say. You know, I've been to Sur, I've been to actually all of them, Pump and Tom Tom, and they're expensive. So the clientele you're attracting probably have more money, I'll say, and are more willing to tip. But I imagine, how does this affect other restaurants who don't have rich clientele? Like maybe you can't ensure that those restaurants are getting, or those servers are getting tipped $500 to $1,000 a night.
Yeah, I guess you can't insure it, but ultimately there's, you know, they may be getting less tips, but hopefully they're getting tips, whereas the people who are in the back like don't get tipped at all.
That's true.
Unless you work in one of those restaurants where, you know, you guys all agree to like pool the tips at the end of the night and split. Listen, I don't agree with what she said. I understand that it's hard, right? Because she's got all these restaurants and they weren't making money, and I'm sure she was paying rent and mortgages and all of that, but like, it was literally in the middle of a pandemic, and clearly, like, people were struggling, and so it just, yeah, not great to go on record and go stand in front of a council and say don't raise minimum wage, but also be also have three class action lawsuits against you for not paying your employees.
I agree. I think PR wise, it's just not good. And especially, like, I am sympathetic to business owners, but then you also think of the workers, yeah, who are hourly.
For sure.
And you're like, well, I'm going to be more sympathetic toward the worker. Yeah. So ultimately, agreed. I think just a bad PR move, but it was a business decision. Yeah. She wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Well, sorry for her, because ultimately this passes and it becomes the highest minimum wage in the country.
It does.
So I guess Lisa's plea did not work.
Yep.
There. And then I have to add that rumors have been swirling that Lisa may return to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, with some reports alleging that she requested $2 million to come back.
Ridiculous. She does not bring that much storyline or excitement.
This is on par with Kathy Hilton's current ask, allegedly.
I love Kathy Hilton.
And she's richer than her, but I would rather see Kathy Hilton because she's such a kooky bat.
Kathy, also though, like, the highest housewife in the franchise right now does not make $2 million. So, like, correct. Sis, you barely talked about your life. Like, why do you think that you deserve $2 million?
She's like in and out following butterflies in the background.
She comes like once a scene for every episode.
But she's still the most entertaining person.
I mean, she's hilarious. When she comes, she's hilarious. But she doesn't bring a good storyline. She's just like,
right,
so rich that she doesn't understand common conversation.
Right. She's like, isn't it $2 million minimum wage now? Yeah. That's what I want.
Exactly.
But Lisa, in October, addressed these rumors and said that she has no intentions of returning, is in a different place in her life, and essentially, I never had this $2 million conversation. I never requested it. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to come back to that. She's doing bigger and better things.
Yeah.
Let's tell us a little bit about those bigger,
better things.
Bigger, better.
Yeah. I knew you were going to get there. So Lisa's website actually says that she's launching a podcast, or is in the process of doing so, and is currently taking questions and, in quotes, ideas for her new podcast. I'm sorry. How are you starting a podcast but taking ideas for your podcast? Like,
yeah,
it just says it's like a variety show where you talk about anything and you're asking your listeners to tell you what to talk about. I don't get it.
I'm going to like text blast 50 of my closest friends and be like, hey guys, I'm thinking about starting my own business. If anyone has any ideas for my business, please text me back.
Shoot them over. Yeah.
I'd love to start my own business, but let me know. Let me know what I can do. Gotta love it. Again, to the out of touchness here, right? She's ridiculous. Entertaining until she's just pure frustrating.
Ridiculous.
Okay, brief summary of what we talked about. Basically, we have a very rich housewife, in quotes, from the Bravo TV show, who was a star for 9 seasons, left because of Poppygate, owns a bunch of restaurants, and basically has gotten sued a lot of times over said restaurants from employees who allegedly have not been paid, among other things. And you got to watch out for her Vanderpump Dog Foundation. If you adopt a dog there, just make sure you give that dog some dewormer medication. Yep. Just in case. All right. Any advice for our listeners today, my friend?
I would say treat your employees as well as you treat the animals that live at Villa Rosa, because she seems to really love her swans and mini horse. So, you know, let's spread the love equally.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, it's also going to be pointed to Lisa, because I know she's listening to this. Lisa, don't steal our podcast idea, first of all. Second of all, give all of your employees bonuses, please, and hire better managers.
Yeah.
Because I think that you need to not necessarily hire people just for their looks, which seems to be the vibe on Vanderpump Rules, if I might say.
Yep.
And make sure that they have some integrity and set a healthy work culture.
Yep.
Okay.
Agreed.
Fantastic.
All right. So let's move into our Q&A section. I have got a question for you from one of our judges.
Okay.
They asked, have you ever had a case where the drama has been so juicy that you wanted to tell someone but you couldn't? I guess let's just give one caveat. So we are not litigators. We don't actually work in courtrooms. Sadly, we don't get to say I object.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So we don't have cases, but we do work on deals. So that being said, do you have any deals where the drama has been really juicy and you couldn't tell anybody?
Yeah, which makes answering this difficult because I can't tell anybody.
Sorry.
But I'm gonna answer it generally.
Okay.
So, in my career, whether you know when I was practicing as a real estate attorney or you know as an entertainment attorney, I think I just found the most amusing points on any deal was how these rich people, because I'm working for rich people, right, in big law, just throw the biggest fits over things that I'm thinking, you're so lucky that you're basically going to be making, I don't know, in real estate especially, like
millions and millions of dollars.
Yes, like a $300 million profit, yeah. And you're balking at having to pay, let's say, like $20,000 in closing costs. Mm-hmm. I would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But they would get really upset, and then I'd have to tell myself, well, maybe this is why they're rich, because they're gonna fight over $20,000 out of, you know, $300 million or $500 million, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I think in the entertainment world, it's the same idea, right? You know, we work with a lot of high-powered talent at times, and the demands that they make, I just is mind-blowing. Where, you know, I'll come back to my little apartment and just feel very like, aw, when I'm seeing like the millions that they're getting or the perks that they want. The perks just, I'm crazy. Like,
I'm just waiting for somebody to like have a Mariah Carey ass, or like, I only want green M&Ms in my trailer. Like, yeah. I've yet to get one of those, but I'm secretly like waiting for it. You know what I mean?
I know of a story where like someone demanded a certain brand of candle in their trailer, and they only wanted a specific scent, and the candles were very expensive. They're like $100 each.
Were they like Sir Trudon candles?
I don't know. Okay. I didn't even pay attention. The only candles I know what is the $5?
The Bath and Body Works?
Yeah, Bath and Body Works. Thanks. Okay. I always want to say Bed Bath and Beyond. That makes sense.
That also
sense.
Used to be a thing, though. I don't think they had their own candle line.
No, they didn't. But those are my stories. I don't know. I'd love to get more specific, but I can't. How about you?
I mean, yes, obviously. I've had so many things that I want to tell people about, but I can't. Luckily, since we work at the same place, I get to tell you about all of my juicy drama, so it's not completely lost.
Yeah.
So I get to vent to someone. But yeah, I mean, 90% of the time, especially working with talent, you see a lot of crazy stuff. You hear a lot of crazy stuff, and you just have to keep your lips tight. You know, loose lips sink ships.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, but I think the moral of the story is ego. It all comes down to like the egos that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
And luckily, for the most part, I think most people are pleasant and reasonable.
Right. Yeah.
But when they're like, "I want a private jet with $100 candles everywhere," I'm like, we don't do that. Sorry.
We could.
Yeah, we could.
You and I could.
I want that for me and you.
That's what I mean. You and I could.
When we're talent, that's what I'm going to be. I'm just taking notes, really, of my demands.
Got a burn book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want like a $10,000 makeup and hair fund, even though I don't really wear makeup.
Yeah, okay.
And my hair is very short, but I just want to demand it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
want to
be difficult. I support that for you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're now moving into our very hot exclusive content for our patrons. If you have not already, please join our Patreon. The link is in all of our bios. Again, we've got super exclusive content there, so hopefully you join.
Well, everybody, don't forget, tell your friends about us. Tell your friends, your coworkers, your dogs. If they have an iPhone, I mean.
Yeah, if they subscribe to podcasts, kids, I guess.
Yeah. I'm just reaching, man.
Okay.
Neighbors, whoever.
Tell FedEx delivery guys, it's holiday time. Tell your USPS workers, you know, they need something good to listen to while they're delivering all of our packages.
Your barista.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Long days.
Mm-hmm. You're the cashier at Kohl's where you're purchasing things.
Yep.
Okay. Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Legally Judgy. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talk as much as we love the sound of our own voices.
If you did, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, join us on our Patreon for more judgy shits and giggles. Until next time.
Bye.